This episode is brought to you by Brilliant. The modern concept of highly restrictive nuclear weapons security simply did not exist for the first decade of the nuclear age. In fact, the primary method of arming safety for most of these early weapons, including Little Boy and Fat Man, the two first operational atomic bombs, was to simply keep the weapons partially disassembled until moments before their release. For the first few years of the United States nuclear weapons program, there was no solid policy on the custody, control, and proliferation of nuclear weapons. By 1953, this would change with the signing of the Missiles and Rockets Agreement. This policy formally defined the roles and responsibilities of the Atomic Energy Commission and the Department of Defense regarding nuclear weapons. With the Department of Defense taking on responsibility for the deployment and potential use of nuclear weapons, the Atomic Energy Commission, now tasked with development, production, and safety, recognized the need for an additional layer of security to prevent unauthorized or accidental detonation. This was bolstered by the fear that each nuclear weapon was effectively under the independent control of one person, the general under whose command it happened to fall under. In April 1961, three Department of Defense committees had been formed to study the issue of use control: the Special Warhead Arming Control Committee, the Safety Steering Group, and Joint Command and Control Study Group Project 106. Simultaneously, the Director of Military Applications at the Department of Energy had requested that Sandia Labs conduct a study on the availability of code control special warhead arming devices. By August, all of these groups had focused on a concept that required a control numerical code to arm a nuclear weapon known as a permissive action link. Permissive action links are defined by the Department of Defense as devices included in or attached to a nuclear weapon system to preclude arming or launching until the insertion of a prescribed discrete code or combination action. It may involve equipment and cabling external to the weapon or weapon system to activate components within it. The first primitive precursors to permissive action links were based on simple three-digit combination locks. These early devices either mechanically secured an obstructing panel or a control panel that contained a removable arming pin, electrical switch, or directly established a critical mechanism or electrical connection within the detonation system. While the combination lock provided access control to the weapon, a secondary system was also employed to keep firing signals away from critical electrical components using an ear gap. Most of these early safety switches were operated by DC motors driven from 28-volt aircraft power, while others derived their operational energy from the delivery environments like missile acceleration. During the 1950s, experience with these simple systems made it obvious how disastrously flawed they were. Combination locks were easily bypassed, and even within the safety system, accidents frequently mimicked the delivery mode of the weapon. Wire insulation and printed circuit boards, for example, became unstable during a fire, which could inadvertently trigger the weapon if the voltage matched the firing voltage. These lessons emphasized the need for more thorough safety analysis and fail-safe design practices. During the mid-1950s, in an effort to bolster the defense of its NATO allies, the United States made the decision to deploy nuclear weapons on foreign soil. However, this arrangement led to a complex situation where the host countries had partial control over these weapons, which was a direct violation of U.S. federal law. Congress was particularly apprehensive about this, as some of the allies, such as West Germany and Turkey, were regarded as potentially unstable partners. The concern was that in these nations, the civilian leadership could potentially override the military's authority. Furthermore, in the event of a conflict, it was likely that certain areas of West Germany would be rapidly overwhelmed, possibly leading to the Soviet Union seizing control of the nuclear weapons stationed there. Based on the results of committee studies in August 1961, the U.S. Secretary of Defense officially asked the Atomic Energy Commission to create permissive links for weapons belonging to NATO. The following month, the Director of Military Applications instructed Sandia National Laboratories to continue their work on developing these devices, which were now formally defined as proscribed action links. However, this would soon be changed to permissive action links in order to remove the initial prohibited connotation of the definition. Sandia was also tasked with presenting a plan to retrofit existing NATO weapons with these devices. Initially, the US military resisted the implementation of permissive action links on nuclear weapons, as they were concerned about losing their autonomy and the possibility of malfunctions rendering the warheads inoperable during a crisis. However, their benefits ultimately proved to be more significant than the drawbacks, as they allowed for the controlled wider distribution of nuclear weapons throughout Europe and other remote locations, deterring the Soviet bloc from carrying out swift and targeted attacks or invasions. By May of 1962, President John F. Kennedy formed a study group under the guidance of his science advisor, Jerome Wiesner, that was tasked with creating a plan to incorporate permissive links into NATO weapons. After reviewing Wiesner's report, President Kennedy issued National Security Action Memorandum 160 on June 6, 1962. This memorandum mandated that all U.S. nuclear weapons deployed to NATO countries be fitted with permissive links, with non-NATO-based weapons remaining exempt. Nearly a decade later, in February of 1972, the Secretary of Defense would make the decision to expand the use of permissive action link control to include nuclear weapons deployed on foreign soil in the Western Pacific region. Despite Kennedy's memorandum, the transition to a comprehensive permissive action link system for U.S. nuclear weapons was a slow process. In 1974, many tactical nuclear weapons still lacked permissive action links, despite the technology being available. It took until 1976 for all tactical nuclear weapons to be equipped with permissive action links, and by 1981, only about half of the U.S. nuclear arsenal had been upgraded from mechanical locks. The complete replacement of mechanical locks with permissive action links across the entire nuclear stockpile wasn't achieved until 1987. In modern thermonuclear weapons, chemical explosives are detonated around a core of fissile material, typically uranium-235 or plutonium-239, arranged in a configuration such as a sphere or pit. This precisely timed detonation, initiated by a device called a fire set, compresses the fissile material into a supercritical state, triggering a fission chain reaction. This initial fission stage, known as the primary, releases immense energy. In thermonuclear weapons, this energy is then used to create the extreme conditions necessary for a secondary fusion reaction, resulting in a far more powerful explosion. Fire sets initiate explosions in a highly controlled and coordinated pattern. They utilize specialized capacitors to store electrical energy at high voltages, around 25,000 to 60,000 volts. When triggered, this energy is rapidly discharged through a low inductance circuit path in a precise sequence through specialized switches, generating intense coordinated electrical pulses. These pulses are directed towards multiple points on an explosive foil initiator, causing a synchronized detonation that creates a uniform shockwave. This precisely orchestrated shockwave then initiates the main explosive charge in a uniform manner. Permissive action links are integrated into the safety system of nuclear weapons, which is based upon the principles of isolation, incompatibility, and inoperability. Both use control and safety systems must work synergistically to create a deliberate linking of the isolated nuclear detonation system to the rest of the weapon. It must also make the weapon incompatible with naturally occurring signals and energy types, while protecting the weapon from the environment found in accidents or uncontrolled conditions by rendering it inoperable. The foundation of both the permissive action link and safety system begins with isolation. The critical components necessary for a nuclear detonation are isolated with a special region enclosed by an energy barrier known as the weapon's exclusion region. In order to initiate a nuclear detonation, an energy control element is used to permit some energy inside the exclusion region in a highly controlled manner for the weapon to first arm. It's critical that only a deliberate action opens the energy control element. This action must only originate from human intent and the delivery environment of the weapon. In practice, this is accomplished by both the permissive action link system and the safety system both being placed in an activated state in order to turn on the energy control element and arm the weapon. The activation modes of these systems are designed to ensure that they are incompatible with naturally occurring signals that could unintentionally trigger them. In accident conditions, it is possible for abnormal environmental exposure to become so intense that the exclusion region barrier loses integrity. In order to maintain nuclear safety in these conditions, purposeful environmental vulnerabilities are incorporated into critical components. Known as weak links, these physical fuses are designed to fail at relatively low levels of abnormal environmental conditions, such as shock, fires, and electromagnetic fields. High voltage capacitors, for example, are a common weak link within nuclear weapons, as they have a relatively low melting temperature and will render the weapon inoperable in a fire. The nuclear weapon safety mechanisms that contain the energy control element are known as strong links. These devices are designed to be rugged and not readily circumvented in vibration, shock, fires, or electromagnetic fields. Strong links consist of a driver, a pattern discriminator, and an energy control element. Strong links are exclusively electromechanical in order to keep them rugged, highly predictable, and deterministic. The drivers within a strong link are solenoid or motors that are actuated by simple, low-voltage electrical external signals. The pattern discriminator looks for a motion from one or more drivers in a specific pattern, forming an electromechanical decoder. If the correct pattern is presented to the discriminator, it activates the energy control element and creates a low impedance pathway into the exclusion region. The operational mechanism of the energy control element can vary widely, from simple electrical contacts to explosive pellets, ferrite buttons, and optical fibers or prisms. If the pattern is not received in the proper order by the discriminator, the mechanism will lock and additional inputs will neither advance it towards the closure of the energy control element or reset the system. Typically, two strong link mechanisms of different types and functionality are arranged in series along the energy path in order to gain independence and prevent common mode failures, with one specifically designated for use control via a permissive action link. In response to the National Security Action Memorandum 160, the Department of Defense began the process of integrating new command and control hardware with all existing NATO-based systems, and short-range theater systems were also upgraded to 5-digit mechanical combination locks. A crash program was also initiated to finish development of the first true permissive action link system, an electromechanical code switch known as a Category A permissive action link. The Category A permissive action link system consisted of the MC-1541 code switch that behaved as an early form of a strong link and its associated control equipment. The MC-1541 is a small motorized device that uses gears, cams, and cam followers to provide 10,000 unique positions. When the correct code is entered, the output switch closes, allowing the weapon to be armed. Two MC-1541 switches were used in each weapon for redundancy. The MC-1541 was known for being complicated and took from 30 seconds to over 2.5 minutes to operate. It was so complex and heavy that control from an aircraft cockpit was deemed impractical. To change the device's code, it must first be unlocked using the correct code. A code change solenoid is then activated, allowing the code wheel to be moved to a new position corresponding to the new code. The solenoid is then released, setting the new code. Finally, an incorrect code must be entered to relock the MC-1541. The support equipment for the MC-1541 included the T-1500 decoder for unlocking and locking the switches, the T-1501 recoder for changing codes, and the T-1502 controller tester for evaluating the proper operation of the T-1500 and T-1501, and the T-436 battery power supply. Together, these components and the MC-1541 switches formed the complete Category A permissive action link system. By the mid-1960s, the Category B permissive action link system would be developed to address the limitations of Category A permissive action links. While the MC-1707 coded switch within the Category B system still used a 4-digit code, it offered several advantages over Category A permissive action links, It required fewer wires to control, making it practical to unlock from an aircraft cockpit. The MC-1707 also allowed for recoding and checking the operational code without unlocking the permissive action link, decreasing operational setup time. It could also perform unlocking in parallel, enabling multiple carriage capability. The original Category B permissive action link system consisted of two MC-1707 electromechanical coded switches in each weapon, two ground controllers, the T-1508 decoder and T-1509 recoder, two controller testers, the T-1520 and T-1521, and three aircraft controllers, as well as the T-436 battery power source. The T-1508 controller is designed to enable, code-check, or disable a weapon. It can be used to check the enable-disable condition of the weapon. It also provided visual indications of the specific codes being utilized and of proper operation of the MC-1707. The T-1509 is used for code-checks and recodes, though it is not capable of an enable operation. The T-1509 provided visual indication of the specific codes being utilized and the proper operation of the coded switches. Both the T-1520 and T-1521 are used for field certification of the operability of the T-1508 decoder and the T-1509 recoder, respectively by electronic simulation of the MC-1707. The T-1520 is also used to certify aircraft decoders. The Category B permissive action link system required only 5 wires for recoding, control, and monitoring when compared to the 14 wires needed by a Category A system. To minimize the impact on aircraft wiring, only 3 wires were required to control multiple switches operating in parallel, with an additional wire per weapon to monitor the lock-unlock status. It was also safer in that it provided recode and code check capability for the stored codes without transferring the output contacts from the locked to the unlocked condition. It also supported automated code sequence insertion with the recoder to prevent invalid code insertion and accidental relocking. Category B permissive action links were installed only in bombs, which have Air Force and Navy applications, and weighed just 2.2 pounds and took only 30 seconds to operate. By the mid-1970s, Category C permissive action links would extend the capabilities of Category B systems with a 6-digit code and the introduction of limited code attempt lockouts. However, the next evolution in permissive action links would occur in 1975, with the introduction of miniaturized microprocessor-based permissive action link controllers and dedicated strong link hardware. The MC-2764 was rapidly developed to be fielded in the W-70-1 and B-61-2 nuclear weapons as the first microprocessor-based Category D permissive action link device. This device introduced the multicode coded switch, or the MCCS concept, in which the input of multiple types of 6-digit codes were employed, including ones that could set the device to a training mode or disable the weapon entirely. This new generation of electronic permissive action links were far more secure, incorporating anti-intrusion sensors, and in some variants were even self-powered by small radioisotope generators to prevent bypass attempts. Category D permissive action links are designed to interface with the MC-2969 intent strong link, which was buried deep within the weapon. When activated, the permissive action link would create a binary pulse train that, if valid, would activate the electromechanical MC-2969. A second strong link, known as a MC-2935 trajectory strong link, is simultaneously fed a pulse train from the MC-4175 or MC-4137 trajectory sensing signal generator, only when both strong links were activated with the weapon arm. During the 1980s, a massive effort was taken to further modernize the safety and use control systems of the U.S. nuclear arsenal, primarily by reducing manufacturing costs and increasing the reliability by simplifying the mechanisms and reducing the number of parts. The first layer of this was the move to a second generation of strong links consisting of detonator strong links and dual magnetic strong links. The detonator strong link uses small mechanical cables from the discriminator to rotate a small explosive pellet in place to establish a detonation path between the detonator and the main explosive charge. This eliminates the electrical bypassing of strong links and also creates a thermal weak link with the explosive pellet. Direct electrical contacts were also removed from strong links because of their susceptibility to high voltage breakdown. This was replaced by dual magnetic based strong links in which half of a transformer is used in combination with highly permeable ferrite buttons between the transformer cores to control energy transfer. The mid-1980s saw the introduction and deployment of the first Category F permissive action links. With the availability of more capable microprocessor technologies, Category F systems went to a 12-digit code system that superseded Category D systems, with more sophisticated features such as code-driven weapon disable modes, emergency stops, and most importantly, the ability to adjust the weapon's yield by code. Category F permissive action links' extended capabilities were made possible by the introduction of encryption into the weapon arming pipeline. The 12-digit code provided to the system is used as a key to transform the environment sensing signal into a resulting signal that propagates to several strong links that configure the fire set's detonation timing sequence, allowing for a variable yield. By 1997, permissive action link devices had been installed on all nuclear devices in the U.S. arsenal, with the U.S. Navy being the last to receive them. Much of the modernization efforts that would occur in the 21st century would focus on miniaturization and ruggedization, with new manufacturing technologies in the field of micromachining being used to produce strong links and associated mechanisms that are just millimeters in size. By November 2001, the Permissive Action Link Code Management System, or CMS, would be deployed. CMS brought cryptographic code management capabilities to the entire arsenal by implementing an end-to-end encrypted method for recoding weapons using a broad variety of communication methods and without the need for custodial security through a dedicated device known as the MC4519 MCCS Encryption Translator Assembly. By the spring of 2004, all permissive action link systems were equipped with the code management system, and it currently remains the foundational technology of future hardware and software improvements to the permissive action link system. Since its inception, probability has governed nuclear weapon access control and safety. Every single element of these systems are designed around even the most unlikely of circumstances and modes of failure. Systematic planning with probability is a critical design skill, and a great way to dive into probabilistic problem solving is Brilliant.org. Brilliant is where you discover the thrill of learning with thousands of captivating interactive lessons in math, data analysis, programming, and AI designed to unleash your potential and transform you into a confident problem solver. Brilliant is a groundbreaking educational platform that distinguishes itself by employing a first principles methodology, empowering learners to construct a robust understanding of fundamental concepts. Every lesson is filled with interactive problem-solving exercises, encouraging active participation and engagement with the subject matter, a method proven to be 6 times more effective than passively watching lecture videos. Furthermore, Brilliant's content is crafted by an esteemed team of award-winning educators, researchers, and industry professionals from renowned institutions such as MIT, Caltech, Duke, and prominent companies like Microsoft and Google. Brilliant immerses you in active problem solving because truly grasping a concept demands more than mere observation and memorization. You need to experience it. By engaging in hands-on learning, you'll not only build real-world knowledge on specific topics, but also develop critical thinking skills that make you a better thinker overall. Investing in daily learning is paramount for personal and professional development, and Brilliant makes this convenient and enjoyable. With captivating, digestible lessons that seamlessly integrate into your daily routine, you can build genuine knowledge in just a few minutes each day. Say goodbye to aimless scrolling and embrace more rewarding ways to spend your free time. A great start to probabilistic thinking I highly recommend is Brilliant's Predicting with Probability course. In this series of lessons, you'll build a solid understanding of applying probabilistic analysis to decision making, allowing you to build solid foundations for analyzing and planning from patterns in data. To try everything Brilliant has to offer for free for a full 30 days, visit brilliant.org/newmind or click on the link in the description below. You will also get 20% off an annual premium subscription.